Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. New York, this is Democracy Now!
We want to play with our friends, go to school, eat and drink, but this vaccination is of no use. It's only useful against polio. But the war has destroyed us. It has destroyed our houses. I wish I can play with my friends, go to school. I wish to eat and drink, like I used to before.
Amidst Israel's continued military bombardment of Gaza, we get an update on the polio vaccination drive with the president of Save the Children U.S., which has staff at a key vaccination site in central Gaza. And as tens of thousands of Israelis protest for a fourth day demanding Prime Minister Netanyahu agree to a Gaza ceasefire and hostage deal, we'll speak with Gershon Baskin, a longtime Israeli back-channel negotiator with Hamas, whose memoir is titled In Pursuit of Peace in Israel and Palestine. And we go to Nashville, Tennessee, where the mayor's just introduced new measures to address what some call the city's Nazi problem. He reopened an investigation into unsolved bombings following the publication of the book Dynamite Nashville, Unmasking the FBI, the KKK, and the bombers beyond their control. We'll speak with the author, Betsy Phillips.
Members of this network were even present in Birmingham in the week before the 16th Street Baptist Church bombing. So, you know, the implications of not catching them while they're in Nashville were enormous for the nation.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The Palestinian Ministry of Health says Israel's latest attacks on Gaza have killed 42 Palestinians while wounding more than 100 others in the last 24 hours. In central Gaza, 9 people were killed as Israel bombed a residential building near a city park. 2 children were among the dead. Elsewhere, at least 7 Palestinians were killed Tuesday when Israel bombed the Ma'a College northwest of Gaza City, where hundreds of displaced Palestinians had taken shelter. Meanwhile, the World Health Organization says its mass vaccination campaign against polio has so far reached about a quarter of Gaza's children after Israel agreed to 8-hour pauses in its attacks. This is Ghada Judah, a displaced Gaza resident and volunteer on the vaccination campaign.
We are displaced from Deir al-Bala. I gave my children the polio vaccine to protect them from disease, but I can't protect them from strikes and from death unless you help us, just as you helped us and delivered the medications to us to protect our children. So please stand with us to stop the war so that our children can live peacefully and to continue their studies.
Israeli forces have expanded their military offensive in the occupied West Bank, where troops have raided the Jalazon refugee camp north of Ramallah. Separately, Israeli forces surrounded Hebron for a fourth day, with more raids reported around Qalqilya, Nablus, and Bethlehem. The Palestinian Authority reports Israeli assaults on the West Bank over the past week have killed at least 33 Palestinians, including 7 children. Meanwhile, pressure is mounting for Israel to release Dr. Khaled Alsar, a highly respected Palestinian surgeon who was abducted by Israeli forces during a raid on Gaza's Nasser Hospital in March. Colleagues say Dr. Alsar has been tortured in Israeli custody at Ofer prison and at the notorious Sadeh Tayman prison camp in the Negev desert, where several Israeli soldiers have been accused of raping Palestinian prisoners. Dr. Alsar is the lead author of a journal article just published in the British medical journal The Lancet. Democracy Now! Spoke to one of the paper's co-authors, Dr. Simon Fitzgerald, a Brooklyn trauma surgeon.
Our lead author, Dr. Khaled Alsar, remains forcibly disappeared. And it was only about probably the same week that the piece was published that we got word through Israeli Physicians for Human Rights, who were able to get a lawyer into Ofer prison, where Dr. Khaled Alsar is, at least at the time he was interviewed in July, was being held, and were able to get testimony that he indeed was abducted by Israeli forces abused, maltreated, basically tortured.
Human Rights Watch reports doctors, nurses, and paramedics held by Israel have faced widespread torture, including beatings, rape, and sexual abuse, forced stress positions, prolonged cuffing, blindfolding, and denial of medical care. To see our segment on that report, go to democracynow.org. Thousands of protesters have taken to the streets of major cities across Israel for the fourth day in a row to demand Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu agree to a ceasefire and hostage deal. This morning, families of hostages held by Hamas held a protest outside Likud Party headquarters in Tel Aviv. That follows Tuesday evening protests outside the Israeli Army headquarters. We'll have the latest on Israel and Palestine. We'll speak with Israeli negotiator Gershon Baskin. In Ukraine, a pair of Russian missiles struck a military academy and hospital in the city of Poltava on Tuesday, killing at least 51 people and injuring more than 270 others. It was among the deadliest attacks on Ukraine since Russia's invasion in early 2022. In a separate assault, a 38-year-old mother was killed with her 8-year-old son in a Russian strike on a hotel in Ukraine's Zaporizhia region. Survivors say the assault came almost without warning.
There was an explosion 2 minutes after the air alert was declared. We had no time to hide. There was a very powerful explosion. We heard people screaming. We understood that there was a collapse at the hotel.
Overnight, Poland's military said it scrambled Polish and Allied fighter planes to its border with Ukraine after Russia launched drone and missile attacks on the western Ukrainian city of Lviv. Those attacks killed 7 people, including 3 children. Meanwhile, several of Ukraine's top government ministers have tendered their resignation as part of President Volodymyr Zelensky's biggest shakeup of his administration to date. Among the high-profile resignations are Foreign Minister Dmytro Kuleba and Weapons Chief Oleksandr Kamishin. In the Democratic Republic of the Congo, at least 129 people were killed on Monday as they tried to escape the notorious Makala prison in Kinshasa. Dozens more were injured. The DRC's security minister says 24 prisoners were shot dead by guards. The rest reportedly died in a crowd crush set off by the chaos. The prison was built to house 1,500 people. At its peak this summer, it held 15,000. Amnesty International's described conditions at Makala prison as appalling, while prisoners report widespread hunger, overcrowding, and abuse.
I have been detained here for a year without trial. The conditions are difficult. The prisoners die every day. The people suffer here like you have no idea. The prisoners eat very badly, and the rations of the prisoners are often diverted by the prison officials.
In Nigeria, at least 81 people were killed Sunday when fighters from the Boko Haram militant group opened fire on villagers in the northeastern state of Yobe. Many survivors said the massacre was retaliation for the community's refusal to pay extortion money to Boko Haram fighters. 15 years of insurgency by Boko Haram has killed tens of thousands of Nigerians while displacing more than 2 million people. At least 12 migrants, including a pregnant woman and several children, have died after their boat capsized as they attempted to cross the English Channel. Some 65 survivors were rescued Tuesday. Most of the migrants on the boat are from Eritrea. The English Channel has become a common route for thousands of migrants attempting to reach the UK for safety. Here in the United States, the summer heat wave is bringing some of the year's hottest temperatures to southwestern states. Excessive heat warnings are in effect in Southern California, where the National Weather Service is forecasting several days of triple-digit heat with highs of up to 120 degrees Fahrenheit in some areas. Meanwhile, Phoenix, Arizona, Tuesday shattered its previous record after logging its 100th consecutive day of temperatures reaching 100 degrees or more, with no end to scorching temperatures in sight. Donald Trump entered a not guilty plea Tuesday after special counsel Jack Smith filed a revised criminal indictment against Trump for his efforts to overturn the 2020 presidential election. Trump also waived the right to be present at his arraignment. Elsewhere, a federal judge in Manhattan has denied a request by Donald Trump to transfer his New York State criminal case to federal courts after rejecting Trump's claims that Judge Juan Merchan was biased against him. In May, Trump was found guilty of all 34 felony charges of attempting to influence the 2016 presidential election by falsifying business records to cover up hush money payments. He's still scheduled to be sentenced on September 18th. Meanwhile, Donald Trump's campaign has been ordered to stop using the music of the late singer Isaac Hayes at Trump rallies. A judge in Georgia agreed with a lawsuit brought by Hayes' family, who says the legendary singer would not have approved of Trump's use of his song, Hold On, I'm Coming. Montana Republican U.S. Senate candidate Tim Sheehy has been caught on tape making racist comments about Native Americans. Sheehy's remarks were first reported by the Charcoosta News, the official publication of the Flathead Indian Reservation, which obtained audio clips of Sheehy at campaign events last November.
Great way to bond with all the Indians to be out there while they're drunk at 8 a.m.
In more racist comments, Sheehy joked that members of the Crow tribe would, quote, let you know whether they like you or not. There's Coors Light cans flying by your head, unquote. Montana's home to 8 federally recognized tribes with more than 70,000 Native Americans of voting age. Political action committees have spent more than $44 million on Montana's Senate race, where Republicans hope to unseat Democratic Senator John Tester in November. Here in New York, federal prosecutors have indicted a former aide to Governors Kathy Hochul and Andrew Cuomo on charges she acted as an agent for the Chinese government. The U.S. Attorney's Office alleges Linda Sun, former deputy chief of staff to Governor Hochul, worked as an undisclosed agent of the Chinese government while her husband helped launder millions of dollars in kickbacks for personal gain. The 10-count criminal indictment also alleges Sun thwarted efforts by Taiwanese officials to speak to New York's governor and eliminated references to Taiwan and China's persecution of Uyghur Muslims from state communications. Hochul's office says the governor fired Sun in March of last year after discovering evidence of misconduct. And in Florida, the federal trial against 3 members of a Pan-Africanist group accused of conspiring with the Russian government to sow discord and interfere in U.S. elections began in Tampa this week. Amalia Shetela, longtime chair of the African People's Socialist Party, also known as the International People's Democratic Uhuru Movement, along with Penny Hess and Jesse Neville, were indicted last year for allegedly working on behalf of Russia in a multi-year foreign malign influence campaign in the United States. Another U.S. citizen and 3 Russian nationals are also part of the case. As the trial got underway Tuesday, Democracy Now! Spoke to Mwezi Odom, chair of Hands Off Uhuru.
The government, as we say, has nothing. And everything that they are accusing the Uhuru 3 of is pure political speech. And, you know, this is, again, just an attempt to rewrite history, you know, that includes, you know, decades of organizing and struggling for, you know, democratic rights in this country, such as the right to vote, the right to freedom of speech, the right to freedom of the press, freedom of association, freedom of assembly, you know, everything.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, War, Peace, and the Presidency. I'm Amy Goodman. Amidst Israel's continued military attacks on Gaza, the World Health Organization says its mass vaccination campaign against polio has so far reached about a quarter of Gaza's children to protect them from paralysis after Israel agreed to 8-hour pauses in its attacks in certain areas of Gaza. This comes after health officials recently confirmed Gaza's first polio case in a quarter of a century, a 10-month-old child. This is Gaza resident Baha Al-Arbid.
We've heard about the truce for polio vaccinations, but I want to stay in this area because I don't trust this truce that has just begun. We still fear bombing will happen at any moment, as it happened this morning.
And this is Qada Judah, who recently got her vaccination, her children vaccinated at Yafa Hospital in Deir al-Bala, where she's also volunteering with the polio vaccination campaign.
We are displaced from Deir al-Bala. I gave my children the polio vaccine to protect them from disease, but I can't protect them from strikes and from death unless you help us, just as you helped us and delivered the medications to us to protect our children. So please stand with us to stop the war so that our children can live peacefully and to continue their studies.
This comes as residents of Gaza are also facing other diseases and chronic lack of food or access to education. This is Karim Yassin, a 10-year-old Palestinian boy in Deir al-Bala as well.
We want to play with our friends, go to school, eat and drink, but this vaccination is of no use. It's only useful against polio, but the war has destroyed us. It has destroyed our houses. I wish I can play with my friends, go to school. I wish to eat and drink like I used to before.
Just before we went to air today, Democracy Now! Received this update from Tarnim Hamad in central Gaza, who's part of the polio vaccination campaign with medical aid for Palestinians.
We would need at least 95% vaccination coverage during each round of the campaign to prevent the spread of polio and reduce the risk of its reemergence. However, we've been facing many challenges, given the severely disrupted health system, also water system and sanitation systems. Other requirements for a successful campaign delivery include sufficient cash, fuel, and functional telecommunication networks to reach communities with information about the campaign, which has been very difficult for all of our healthcare workers and social mobilizers who are working on the ground. Gaza has been polio-free for the last 25 years, so the reemergence, which the humanitarian community has warned about for the last 10 months, is another threat to the children in Gaza and also to the neighboring countries. A ceasefire is the only way to ensure public health security in Gaza and also in the region.
For more, we're joined in Washington, D.C. by Yanti Sarepto, President and CEO of Save the Children U.S. Its staff is working from Deir al-Balah Primary Health Care Center, a key vaccination site, working there in Gaza. Welcome to Democracy Now!, Yanti. Can you explain what is happening? How many people you understand have gotten this vaccine? It's children that they're attempting to do.
Thanks, Amy. Yes, our site, our primary healthcare center in Deir al-Balah, is one of the 51 sites where vaccinations are given to children. I've understood that on day one, we were able to vaccinate 1,825 children already, which is encouraging, of course, and our staff are working around the clock to make sure that people understand, that parents understand where they can go to get vaccinations, that those vaccinations are safe, to make sure that children are prepped, and to make sure that healthcare workers are trained in order to do so safely. But of course, we need much more than just a couple of days to be able to give these vaccinations. Also, you heard the cover rate there between 90 and 95%. But you have to give two doses of these vaccinations, and they have to be 4 weeks apart. So one dose is not enough.
And can you talk about how these vaccines are being administered? Israel's agreed to certain pauses in the bombing. We're reporting about children being vaccinated in this area and children being killed in this area by Israeli bombs. Explain how it all happens and how the vaccines are getting into Gaza right now.
So the vaccines are getting in through the WHO over the road, but I think, look, you laid out so clearly. You can say I have an 8-hour pause in the window in which you can vaccinate these children in these 51 designated sites. But then, I mean, in practice, yeah, children then have to be moved to a particular site. Then they sometimes have to move back to where they were displaced, because most of the people in Gaza are displaced anyway. They're not in their homes. Homes are destroyed. So it's very hard to see. I can imagine, you heard the previous person in Gaza talking how worried they were to actually even travel across the roads that are destroyed to some of these clinics. So there's real practical operational problems with this current pause. It is not a ceasefire at all. It is an 8-hour pause every day. And then again, the vaccine are oral drops, two or three drops per dose. You have to give them twice with 4 weeks in between. That means you have to track and trace these children as well. They're all displaced. Whatever happens between the intervening 4 weeks between those doses then also impacts how effective your campaign can be.
So according to the World Health Organization, the Israeli military bombardment of Gaza has damaged or destroyed 31 of 36 hospitals in the area. Can you talk about the significance of this and also how polio has reemerged after a quarter of a century in Gaza?
Yeah, it is unbelievable. Look, I was there end of March, and I thought it was unbelievably dire then. And clearly, it has gotten much, much worse since. Because I was there when people were still congregating in Rafah. And since then, they've been displaced from Rafah in the south of Gaza as well. So You know, there is very, very limited access to healthcare. We set up that primary healthcare center in Deir al-Balah. If you look at the people who come there every day, over half of them have to walk more than an hour to get even to that site. So that tells you something about the lack of healthcare, adequate healthcare in Gaza right now. And the emergence of polio doesn't surprise us. Save the Children and many other organizations and doctors have been warning against this for many, many weeks now. If you look at the sanitation, the sanitary conditions there, solid waste is everywhere in the Gaza Strip. There are not enough toilets. There are no showers. This was a situation just waiting to happen.
So you talked about how this is a two-dose regimen, and they're trying to get, just under 700,000 children to inject them with these vaccines. This never was an issue in the past. But if they are only able to get the first dose, is it ineffective?
That's not the right level of coverage. I think, and we should also remind ourselves, these are oral drops. Children are already in Gaza, are already malnourished. They're weakened. Their immune systems are compromised after almost a year of conflict, displacements, lack of food. You heard it here before, lack of clean water, etc. So to get adequate protection, they would definitely need those two doses. So we're concerned that even in the current setup, we will do what we can. The WHO is doing what they can, but it's going to be difficult to reach the coverage numbers in the way that you would normally do it in a campaign.
So surviving families in Gaza have to trust that as the polio vaccination campaign makes its way, for example, to Rafah, and then there's a pause there, that they won't be bombed if they leave their house or wherever they are currently displaced to get this vaccination. That's in Gaza. Meanwhile, tens of thousands of Israelis are continuing their protests, calling for a ceasefire and a hostage deal from the Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, who has said no so far. The significance of this and the position of Save the Children on a ceasefire.
We've been calling for a ceasefire since October last year, because we know, as humanitarian operators, that that is the only way to get adequate aid, supplies, and services to children and families that need it now. In the current scenario, our amazing staff and volunteers in Gaza are doing what they can at the risk of their own lives. We've lost colleagues and partners over these past months. But it's really difficult to get people to come out, whether they get vaccinated, whether to get food, whether to get some level of mental health support or protection. When bombs are falling and deconfliction, so the safety of your convoys, of sending your own staff on the road with supplies to reach people, is not guaranteed at all.
In a moment, we're going to speak with Gershon Baskin, Middle East Director of the State International Communities Organization, a back-channel negotiator with Hamas in the past. So I wanted to switch gears just for 1 minute, Yanti, to talk about what's happening in the Democratic Republic of Congo. In mid-August, the World Health Organization declared a public health emergency in response to Mpox. This is Nzigiri Lakangira, whose child has been suffering from Mpox for days in an isolation ward in Kavumu in the eastern DRC.
Since my child got this disease and I brought him here, he only received one injection and some pills. The conditions here are very poor. We have no food and people are forbidden to visit us because we have a dangerous disease. We are suffering a lot and feel like we will die of hunger here.
Before we go, Yanti Sirepto, as chair and as president and CEO of Save the Children U.S., you were just in the DRC. Can you talk about this outbreak of Mpox and what people should understand and how difficult it is to get a vaccination right now?
Right, thanks. Yes, I was there in May. I was actually in South Kivu, which is now the epicenter, I think, of this particular outbreak with 50% of the cases. It is an incredibly contagious disease. It is very dangerous for children. So of the cases, I think two-thirds of the cases affect young children. And again, And we see a pattern here, Amy, whether it's Gaza or the DRC or Sudan, for that matter. You know, contagious diseases, whether it's cholera or polio or mpox, you know, wreak havoc on populations that are already vulnerable, that are displaced, and there is no access to proper healthcare, vaccinations, no sanitation. So, and they, these diseases often cause even more casualties than bombs and bullets. So we're doing what we can. Again, we're working with communities to make sure that they understand how to prevent or reduce the risk of spreading. Simple hygiene, hand washing. Again, clean water is in short supply. People are weakened because there was already a food insecurity crisis. We're trying to ascertain where people can have access to healthcare. But as you heard on the previous segment, it is difficult to get access to medicine. And there is currently no vaccines in the DRC either.
Yanti Sirupto, we want to thank you for being with us, President and CEO of Save the Children U.S. Next up, as tens of thousands of Israelis protest for Prime Minister Netanyahu to agree to a Gaza ceasefire, we'll speak with Gershon Baskin, longtime Israeli back-channel negotiator with Hamas. His new book, In Pursuit of Peace in Israel and Palestine. Stay with us. يوم عم بنزيد شوف فايدات الكترة والحرية مش بالإيد من يوم موعيت وأنا بنت هاي البلاد بكاء أطفال وبسمة أولاد الأرض صوبها أسود خيم علينا حداد بطلنا نعد أحياء صرنا نعد أموات وأنا بقول بكفي عاد بدي أمسك قدري بكفي بكفي البحر ميت أنا وحدي طايشي مهتم ومش مهتم عارفي ومش عارفي طريق طويل أنا لساتني بلشي بكفي عاد بكفي عاد بكفي عاد وأنا ما أنتي أسري بكفي بكفي عاد بكفي عاد بكفي عاد وأنا
by Mesa Daw. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Tens of thousands of Israelis have protested across Israel for the fourth day in a row to demand Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu agree to a Gaza ceasefire and hostage release deal. Today, families of Israeli hostages protested outside the Likud party headquarters in Tel Aviv. This followed a Tuesday evening protest outside the Israeli army headquarters. Despite the mounting pressure, Netanyahu remains defiant, refusing to accept a ceasefire deal while putting forward new demands and insisting he would not agree to any deal with Hamas unless Israel maintains control of the Philadelphia corridor along Gaza's border with Egypt. President Biden's called on the Israeli leader to do more to secure an agreement with Hamas following the recovery of the bodies of six dead hostages. On Tuesday, U.S. State Department spokesperson Matt Miller addressed the ceasefire negotiations.
Over the coming days, the United States will continue to engage with our partners in the region to push for a final agreement. During talks last week, we made progress on dealing with the obstacles that remain, but ultimately, finalizing an agreement will require both sides to show flexibility. It will require that both sides look for reasons to get to yes, rather than reasons to say no.
This comes as the Middle East Eye is reporting an anonymous Turkish foreign ministry official is accusing the United States of misleading the public by claiming that the Gaza ceasefire negotiations are progressing favorably and that Washington is not exerting enough pressure on Israel. We go now to Jerusalem, where we're joined by Gershon Baskin, Middle East director of International Communities Organization, a human rights advocacy group for years. He's been a back-channel Israeli negotiator with Hamas and ceasefire deals, including during Israel's current war on Gaza in 2011, when he helped negotiate the release of Israeli soldier Gilad Shalit from Hamas captivity in exchange for more than 1,000 Palestinian prisoners. On Tuesday, Baskin shared a deal Hamas leaders told him they would accept and that would lead to the release of all remaining Israeli hostages. He recently wrote, quote, "Let it be clear
that Netanyahu has sentenced the hostages to death. Netanyahu stated that Israel will not leave the Philadelphia corridor, meaning that Israel will occupy Gaza for many more years. Netanyahu is sacrificing the hostages on an altar of his own personal political survival. Gershom Baskin, welcome back to Democracy Now! Why don't you lay out the situation as you understand it at this point and talk about the protests in the streets, what they're demanding of Netanyahu, and why he's refusing?
I think it's important.